Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in East Liverpool, Ohio, and talked with a lisp. Unemployed at age 28 with a wife and three children, he wrote down 107 goals, including meeting the Pope, the President, and Johnny Carson. He became a college football coach for 33 years and led Notre Dame to a national championship in 1988. Today, he's an ESPN college football analyst and motivational speaker. His name, Lou Holtz. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Lou Holtz, one of America's greatest motivational speakers. Lou, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. Delighted to be with you and your audience.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I was born in Follansbee, West Virginia, many years ago, 1937 to be exact, January the 6th, and I was a Depression baby. I was a second of, I had an older sister, 2 years older. My dad was basically unemployed, was born in a cellar, not a basement, a cellar. We had one bedroom where my sister and I and my mother and father both slept. We had a kitchen, we had a half bath, but that's all we could afford. We were very, very poor, but then again, everybody was at that time. I did have maybe five uncles and three aunts that really made me feel very, very special. But probably the most determining factor in my younger years was I was approximately 5 years of age when they needed people to fill up the first grade at St. Anthony's grade school. And they got out the baptismal certificates, and I was the closest to the age. And I came to Mom and said, do you mind if Lou goes to school early? And being the last child home, my mom said, no, that'd be great. So I started to school. Consequently, I was barely 16 when I graduated. So I was 2 years ahead of my class. And what it did, Jack, it really hurt me athletically. It hurt me academically. And it certainly hurt me socially. I went through high school. I never had a date in high school. Never went to a prom. I mean, everybody going to prom, I'm playing with trucks, et cetera. It hurt me athletically because I was just very, very inferior physically, et cetera. But you know what it was? It turned out to be a very positive thing because you learn to handle abuse. I had a very bad list. People would make fun of me. My classmates would ride me. I was always being bullied, et cetera. But you learn to handle that. You know, you go through certain stages of life, and certainly infancy, where you have to rely on everybody for everything. Then you go through childhood, and in childhood, you realize that you aren't the fastest, you aren't the most popular, you aren't the smartest, you aren't the brightest, you certainly aren't the toughest, but you learn to handle that. You learn to adjust to that. I think you have to learn to handle adversity and difficulty. And when I reflect back on it, it was very difficult doing that at the time, but it turned out to be a very, very positive thing. And then when I was in the second grade, my dad went into World War II. He went into the Navy. And because of that, my mother then moved my sister and I to East Liverpool, Ohio, to live with her parents. And this was a very positive experience because I had an uncle, my Uncle Lou. He was in high school. He's a football player, and he just took me on like a little brother, and it was absolutely great. Then he ended up going in the service as well. But when my dad got back out of the Navy, he didn't want to relocate the family, and there were more job opportunities at East Liverpool, Ohio. And consequently, that's where we were raised. I graduated from St. Aloysius High School. I was taught by the Sisters of Notre Dame. I marched out every day at noon recess and dismissal to the Notre Dame Victory March, became a Notre Dame and Ohio State fan. At that stage, Notre Dame had gone 4 years, Jack, without ever losing a football game. Johnny Lou Jack became my idol along with so many others. My grandfather and I and my Uncle Lou would listen to the Ohio State and the Notre Dame games, and I just became infatuated with the game of football. I went into high school. Naturally, I went out for football. I was smaller. I wasn't a particularly good athlete. I stayed with it. But East Liverpool was just a great town to be raised in, Jack. There were good people there. The morals, the values that they instilled in you, not only the teachers, but the townspeople, et cetera, the work habits. It was just a great experience for me growing up at that time. And I still go back to East Liverpool. We still try to do an awful lot of things. But at that time, I wasn't a good student. I goofed off more than anything else. Nobody would listen to me unless I could make something humorous and make people laugh. And all I wanted was a car, a girl, $5, and a job in the steel mill. I didn't know who could want any more out of life than that. Then my high school coach came up to my parents and said, Lou ought to go to college and be a coach. And I didn't want to go to college. I wasn't good enough of a student, never thought about it. Nobody from my family had ever gone to college. And my mom said, you're going to college? I said, I'm not. So we compromised, and I went. That was a typical compromise in our family. Consequently, my mother had to go to work as a nurse's aide, working 11 to 7 at night in order to help finance my college education. And that's how I end up in college, and that's how I grew up.
So many of us, when we're young, are ridiculed in school. That's almost part of growing up. For some of us, we turn that disadvantage, that lemon into lemonade. For others, they never overcome that. What's the difference, Lou?
Oh, Jack, I think it's so important for young people to understand frustration. And when I see things happening today, there are two things about the youth that really concern me. Is one, that they don't want anybody to have any disappointment. They don't want to have grades. They don't want to have anything competitive because they want everybody to be equal. And what I have found, Jack, is we aren't going to be equal in certain areas. And where we may be very weak in one area, we have a very strong strength in others. And that's a fact that you learn to find out what you can do well. You learn to handle adversity. You learn to handle difficulty. And you can't hide your children from it. We want to. We don't want our children to have any inconveniences. We don't want them to be disappointed. But that's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you learn to adapt. And that's where your self-confidence comes from, is when you do enjoy some success. The other thing that I find very, very troubling to me, and of course I'm old-fashioned, Jack, and I'm not saying what I'm professing is right, but I'm not worried about being politically correct, and that is the fact that children should not be taught that they are the center of everybody's life. When I was growing up as a child, you were seen and not heard around adults. You earned the right to be an adult. You earned the right to be able to express yourself. Now, when you're one-on-one with your child, yeah, you shower them the attention, you do everything else, but they aren't adults. Today, everybody wants all the privileges of being an adult. They want to drink, they want to drive, they want to have sex, but they don't want any of the responsibilities that go with it. And I think that when people are made to believe that they're the center of everybody's life and whatever they do is okay, and then go out to dinner and then scream and holler and yell and then go to church and run up and down the aisles and scream and holler, and nothing said to them, it's just like, well, hey, everything revolves around me. And that's not the way life is. That's not the purpose for our life. Our purpose, we have four things you need to have in life, and this is very important. If you have these four things in life, you're fine. One, you need something to do. And that's one of the problems with people who retire. They don't find anything. Everybody needs something to do. Number two, you need someone to love. Point number three, you need something to hope for. You have to have something that you really want to have come true in the future. And point number four, you have to have someone to believe in. If you have all four of those things, life is rather easy.
We're talking to Lou Holtz. When we come back, we'll ask him how, at age 28, he was unemployed with a wife and a third child on the way, and what he did. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Lou Holtz. Lou, you're 28 years old. You've got a wife, third child on the way, and you lose your job. What happens?
Well, Jack, I think what happened leading up to that is equally as important. When I went to Kent State University and graduated from there, and all I wanted to do was coach high school football, and I was going to get married to my wife, Beth, and we're going to get married, and I was going to accept a job at Conneaut High School. And unfortunately, on about July 5th, she said no. My high school, my college football coach, Trevor Reese, had gotten me a graduate assistantship at Iowa University under Forrest Evesheski. And so she broke up with me at 9 o'clock, got in the car, drove to Iowa, accepted a graduate assistantship. We went on to finish second in that country, and that's how I ended up in college rather than in high school. And then, of course, we made up and got married the following year, and I became an assistant coach at William & Mary, et cetera, and was moving along, just a nice assistant coach. And I finally accepted a job at University of South Carolina as a defensive backfield coach under a gentleman by the name of Marvin Bass. I was so excited. My wife was 8 months pregnant with our third child, Kevin, who later graduated from Notre Dame and now is Notre Dame's law school, or graduated from Notre Dame's law school as well. And so we were just so excited, and we were there 1 month. We spent every cent we had in the bank for a down payment on the home. I am there 1 month, and I get up on a Monday morning. The headline of the state paper reads, Marvin Bass resigns. I said to my wife, I wonder if he related to my coach. Well, about an hour later, we met with the president, Thomas F. Jones, who informed us he's going to hire the best coach available, and it turned out to be Paul Dietzel, and he would give Paul Dietzel the freedom to hire or retain the staff. Well, I wasn't very impressive, didn't have a good resume, didn't know anybody at South Carolina to recommend me, didn't know anybody on Paul Dietzel's staff, and so consequently, he told me that I would not be retained. And it was very disappointing, and after my wife gave birth to Kevin, she went to work as an x-ray technician, which was her chosen field. And I said, stay-at-home dad, and I want to tell you, you talk about being defeated, you talk about your ego, here you are, you're supposed to be the leader of the family, and your wife's the one going out and making the money, et cetera. And so she knew I was depressed. She bought me a book, The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. Now, I'm the only guy in the world right now, Jack, that's written more books than he's read. And that was the one book that she gave me. And so when the children would take a nap, I'm going through, and he talked about goals. And he said to get out a piece of paper and make up five different areas. First of all was things I wanted to accomplish as a husband and a father. We had four children. Three graduated from Notre Dame, one from Centenary. My wife and I have been married, I think it's July 22nd. We'll be married 45 years. Things I wanted to accomplish religiously. Jack, God's very important in my life. I don't preach it. I don't lecture it. But I hope the way I live my life reflects the faith I have in God. Column number three was things we want to accomplish financially. I start listing down things I'd like to do financially. And column number four was things I want to do professionally. You know, what would I want to do? Well, I certainly wanted to coach at Notre Dame, wanted to win a national championship, a variety of different things, coach of the year, et cetera. Column number five was just things you want to do for excitement. That don't go through life and be a spectator, but be a participant. You only have to do something once, and you'll experience it many times thereafter. So I'm sitting there, and the first thing I put down, I want to jump out of an airplane. And because when I was in the Army as a first lieutenant, I was stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, as well as Fort Benning, and both those are airborne places, and watching people jump out of an airplane all day long, I thought, gee, that'd be great to do. I wanted to land on an aircraft carrier. I wanted to go on a submarine. I wanted to be on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. I wanted to learn to do magic. I wanted to make a hole-in-one. I wanted to play the greatest golf course in the world. I wanted to go whitewater rafting on the Snake River. I wanted to go to the White House for dinner. I wanted to visit with the Pope. I want to go to Pamplona and run with the bulls with a slower person. And I had 107 of those goals. And when my wife came home, I was so excited. I said, we're going to do them all. And my wife, Beth, is just such a super person. And she looked at him and said, gee, that's great, she said, but why don't we get a job? So we made it 108. And we've done 102 of those things, Jack. I've done everything I mentioned except run with the bulls. But it just gives you a purpose of life. And talking about my wife, I also want to pause here and say to our audience, if you really want some great advice, listen to your spouse. Nobody knows you any better, loves you any more, wants to see you succeed any more, or be any more honest with you. So my wife has been very instrumental in my life, and she's not only somebody I love dearly, she's my best friend.
some of these goals are unbelievable. No way on earth you should have ever written these goals. Why do most of us, Lou, when we dream and set goals, we don't set huge ones? Why is that?
Well, I think we have a tendency to underestimate ourselves, Jack. And so many times we just say the word dream, and that's all we do. It's not really a goal list. It's a wish list. Gee, I wish this would happen. I wish that would happen. I think if you sit down and decide what you want to do, what's important to you, and remember the word when. When stands for what's important now. It'll evaluate the past, focus on the future, but tell you what you have to do in the present. For example, if you want to be a national champion or you want to be a great football player, ask yourself 25 times a day, what's important now? This is what I want to do. What's important now? You get up in the morning, I want to be a great football player. What's important now? Well, get out of bed. Choice isn't, do you want to stay in bed or do you want to get up? Because that's easy. You want to stay in bed. The question is, do I want to stay in bed or do I want to be a great football player? What's important now? You're out of bed. Eat breakfast. Need your strength. What's important now? Go to class. Sit in the front row. Take good notes. You're in the weight room. You want to be a great football player. What's important now is to get stronger, to work at it. Not because somebody's looking at you, because somebody's going to give you the award, not because somebody's going to pat you on the back. You know, that's what you have to do. And you're out at Saturday night and there's drugs and booze and sex and heroin. You want to be a great player. What's important now? Avoid that situation. And I don't care whether you're talking about being a mother, if you're talking about being an airplane pilot, I don't care what you're talking about. If you just say, this is what I want to do, what do I have to do now in order to get there? It's not complicated. But so many people think, oh, I can't possibly obtain this. And you're going to have difficulty. You're going to have adversity. It isn't going to be easy about it. But you have to understand if it's important to you, you'll continue to persevere. You'll continue to find different ways to get there.
We're talking to Lou Holtz, who's the only man to ever take six different college football teams to a bowl game. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Lou Holtz. Lou, you coached six different college teams, William & Mary, North Carolina State, Arkansas, Minnesota, Notre Dame, and South Carolina. Every time you took over a losing program, and every time within 2 years, you had them in a bowl game. How did you do that?
Well, I think you have to have good people with you, Jack, obviously. But number one, I believed that we could win. I believe we could turn around, no matter how destitute the situation may have been. Minnesota and South Carolina both had the longest losing streak in the country when I went there. But losing situations, Jack, there's two types of teams. Those that lift each other up and those that pull each other down. And every time you go into losing situations, a group of people who don't have self-confidence in themselves consequently sort of pull against everybody else because they don't think they can achieve success. You go in, number one, with good fundamentals. I learned that from Woody Hayes. You learn to block. You learn to tackle. You learn to do those things there that enable you to be successful. And then I've always had three rules. Do the right thing. Do everything to the very best of your ability and always show people you care. And I try to keep life simple. Those three rules are critical, and I will not compromise them. You just do the right thing. Do the best you can, show people you care, because, Jack, everybody asks three questions. One, can I trust you? Two, are you committed to excellence? Three, do you care about me? Now, if you do the right thing, you're going to have trust. Players have to be able to trust each other, got to be able to trust the coaches. You got to have players you can trust as well. And this is true in your personal life, true in your business life. My wife and I have been married 45 years because she can trust me and I can trust her. We lose that trust, we have no chance. Second question everybody asks, are you committed to excellence? Do you want to be good? You can have all the slogans you want, Jack. You send a message whether you're committed to excellence by the standard you have. And all I ask people to do is do everything the best they can, whether it be in the classroom or on the football field. Point number three, do you care about me? And I had the opportunity to teach physical education to the physically handicapped people with spinal bifida, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, etc. When I see people with talent, ability, and opportunity bitch and moan and complain about some little thing, that drives me up a wall. How lucky we are, and let's reach out and show other people you genuinely care. And you take two people, somebody you love, admire, and respect, somebody you got a problem with. Put those three questions on each person, yes or no. Guarantee you, Jack, person you admire and respect, you said yes to all three questions. Person you got a problem with, you pinpointed the problem. Either you can't trust them, they aren't committed, or they don't care. All I tried to do was eventually get a group of people that you could say yes to all three of those questions, put it with good fundamentals, set some goals, stand back, and watch them do great things.
We're talking to Lou Holtz, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Lou Holtz. Lou, time after time, the most important game of the season, you would suspend 1, 2, 3 of your superstars. Can you talk about the Arkansas in 87, the Notre Dame against USC, and then talk about why you did that, why you didn't turn your eye and look the other way?
Well, I think, Jack, you're referring to the 77 Orange Bowl at the University of Arkansas. We're a very good football team. We're going down to play the University of Oklahoma, which all they had to do was beat us to be national champs. And in our preparation, I had to suspend three athletes who scored 78% of our touchdowns. Now, all I said was they violated the do right rule, and I don't want to get into what they did, but I thought it was serious enough. They took me to court to get an injunction to play, and the attorney general of the state of Arkansas called me and said, I'll represent you in this case. And his name was Bill Clinton, later went on to become governor and president, and did a tremendous job for us. But in any event, the suspension was held up. But and then in, I think it was 88, we went out to play Southern Cal. We're number one in the country. They're number two. We're both 10-0. The winner has a chance to play for national championship. And the morning of the game, I had to send two of our players home, the leading ground gainer and the leading receiver, and put them on the airplane and flew them home. Now, what's important to understand, Jack, that I didn't want to do this, and I don't consider myself a disciplinarian. All I ever do, though, Jack, is I enforce other people's decisions. Let's take in the case of 70 or of 88. I'd said to those two young men, and I'd warned them, if you do this one more time, your fault, my fault, bus driver's fault, heart attack, I don't care. If you choose to do this one more time, you're choosing not to play in the game. Now, you only say that when you really feel very strongly, and enough was enough, and it was affecting the rest of the players. And we are a team, and a team means we're uniform. We're together. It's a group of young men having one solid purpose, and that was to win the football game. And if you choose to do this, you're choosing not playing the game. Now, Jack, these are good people. I want to tell you, they're good people. They made bad decisions, but they're good people. And I told them, one more time, you're choosing not to play the game. They did it. And then I said, you're not going to play in the game. I didn't make that decision for them not to play in the game, Jack. They made that decision. They made that decision when they chose to do this one more time. So I had no other option except to enforce their decision. And naturally, everybody plays on your sympathy. Please, one more time, I won't do it again. We had gone through this, and I'd say to them, please, because you didn't honor your word, don't ask me to break mine. I told you, if you do this, this is going to be the result, and that's going to be it. You're going to learn that decisions have ramifications, and you're going to be held responsible for the decisions you make. The difference between people today and 25 years ago, everybody wants to talk about their rights and privileges. 25 years ago, people talked about their obligations and responsibilities. And when you join a team, You join a family. You bring a child in this world. You join a spouse. You join a company. You have obligations. You have responsibilities. If you want to fail individually, you have that right. That's great about this country. But nobody has a right to cause other people to fail because they won't honor their commitment. And that was it. I'd say to our children, same thing. If you choose not to do your chores, and our children have always had chores. They weren't very big. When from the time they were three, their job may be to put the spoon on the table for dinner. I wanted our children to understand that everybody contributed to the overall welfare of the family. You had an obligation. If you choose not to do this, you're choosing to stay home on Saturday night in your room. And when they did it, we enforced their decision. Was it easy? No. Did they prey upon your sympathy? Absolutely. But I don't believe you're doing a disservice to yourself or you're doing a disservice to them if they do certain things and you don't honor what you told them. And I'd go in Saturday night and I'd say, why are you here Saturday night? Why aren't you? Oh, I remember you choose to stay at home. I hope you don't choose that next week because it seems to me it'd be much more fun to be out with your friends. And that's just how I try to enforce it. It's not me making the decision. I'm not king and say, well, I decided I want you to play and you not to play. No, it was your decision. And you knew beforehand that if you choose to do this, you're choosing not to play. And there are too many people in this world in the course of their lifetime would tell them this would happen. And when that happened, they wouldn't enforce the decision people made.
How did the other players react, and what was the outcome of Arkansas against Oklahoma and Notre Dame against USC?
Well, the team reacted different ways, Jack. First of all, let's understand that players love their teammates, and they always want to see you bend the rules, et cetera. And at Arkansas, there was a lot of negativity in the press, et cetera, because people never knew why I suspended them. The players just didn't believe that they could win. And we're down there. We're 24-point underdog in the Orange Bowl. And we had a team meeting one day, and I said, I know all the reason why we can't win. What I want you to do is tell me why we can. And when they start talking and thinking about it, I said, I read about the great athletes from Oklahoma going to play. I read about the great athletes from Arkansas that aren't. I never read anything positive about anybody in this room, so I know why we can't win. Tell me why we can't. Well, and they point out we had a great defense, which we did. We had a great punter, great place kicker, and then they talk about our offensive line. The more they talk, Jack, they start focusing on what we had rather than what we didn't have. And we won the football game against Oklahoma, even though we're a 24-point underdog. We won it 31-6. Now, the Notre Dame situation was different. When I went to the team and said, what do you think? And I talked to the seniors, and they were in 100% accordance with it, that this is a team, and nobody's any better than anybody else. And they were very, very focused, very, very supportive. We went out. We won the football game. We beat Southern Cal, which had a great football team. We beat them 27-10. We played an incredible defensive football game. And the outcome of the football game really isn't relevant. I think you have to stand for something. What do you believe in? And you know, Jack, I think there are a lot of people in this world that are successful in life, and that's great. But when they're successful in life and they die, that ends. The thing about coaching, and you ran a $150 million company that you founded, you have a chance to be significant. And significant is when you help other people be successful. And when you're significant, that will last many, many a lifetime. And I always felt as a coach, it isn't about winning the game. You do the right things, winning the game will take care of itself. Just help those people learn about life and being honest and being up fair. And if you tell them you're going to do something, you don't do it, you're going to lose the trust of the players. I don't believe you could ever learn to do that. So we've been fortunate. Most of the times I've suspended an athlete and actually enforced their decision. We've been very, very successful, but I've always been able to go to the football team and say, man, this was their choice. I told them, if you do this, you aren't going to play, and they choose not to do it. They choose to neglect it, and you people have honored the rules. They did. This is going to be the result of it, and I just believe it. I don't believe in punishing people, but I do believe in holding people accountable for the decisions they make. I don't like people blaming everybody else because of this, Jack. If you're down and you're blaming everybody else for you being down, then you don't believe you can pick yourself up by yourself. You feel you're going to have somebody else help you because they helped you get down there. Be accountable for what you did. Stand up. Take account of your actions and figure out a way to resolve your problems.
When we come back, we'll ask Lou Holtz about his best-selling book, Winning Every Day. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Lou Holtz. Lou, your best-selling book, Winning Every Day, focuses on 10 strategies that can assist an individual in achieving success in his or her professional and personal life. Can you talk about them?
Well, Jack, first of all, I never had any intentions of writing a book, but they asked me if I would put down my philosophy for the same thing I used in speaking into a book. And I said, gee, I don't have time. And I was coaching Notre Dame. And then when I left the University of Notre Dame, I thought, okay, they asked me to put it in a book. And so I started to work with it. And then what happened, my wife was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer of the throat. They gave her 10% chance to live. I'm happy to report she's doing very well now. That's 7 years later, even though she's had her second major cancer surgery. And so they called me, and I guess it was in October, and said, how's the book coming? Well, Jack, I hadn't even started because I'm just concerned about my wife's health, et cetera. And they said, well, it has to be in by December 20th, something like that. And so I wrote that book in about 6 weeks, and I wrote it by myself, and all I did was just put down the things that I really believed in very, very strongly. I talked about, the attitude. I think attitude's a choice. I think that's by far the most important thing. And, yeah, what's our attitude when we have adversity? What's our attitude when we have good things happen to us, et cetera? Then the second thing we definitely want to talk about was overcoming adversity, overcoming difficulty. We're all going to get knocked down, Jack, but you have two choices. You either stay down or you pick yourself up. I mean, you can't count on anybody else. The third thing is about you have to have a passion to win, a passion to succeed. You don't ask athletes how many want to win. Everybody wants to win. The band's playing, the crowd's cheering, the TV lights are on. The question you ask, can you live with losing? Can you live with failure? Can you live with mediocrity? Another thing we want to talk about was being focused on what you're trying to do. All I ever wanted to do was graduate our athletes and win. Every decision should be, how can we graduate? How can we win? You look at any business, it's just helping the customers get what they want. And then we talked about change, understanding change. That people fight change, embrace change. I didn't like to throw the football. It's not hard to run a football, not hard to take and turn and hand the football off, but boy, it's hard to throw the football. But when I went to South Carolina, when we tried to run the football, we weren't successful, so we had to change. We had to spread out. We had to throw. Did I want to do it? No, but you had to change or else we couldn't win. So always look and say, this is what we're trying to do, and embrace change if it'll help you reach that purpose. The other thing we talked about, Matt, was about dreams. We've talked about here, and let me say this, Jack, the thing that I regret the most, and I made a lot of bad decisions, but I don't regret them. But the thing I do regret, and I did not write about this in the book because I wasn't aware of it at the time. But when I went to the University of Notre Dame, we took a program that was on the bottom. Miami had beat Notre Dame 58-6, I think, the last game of the preceding season. And we went to 9th straight January 1 Bowl, Sugar Cotton, Orange or Fiesta. Nobody's done that before, and nobody's done it since. And we got on top, and we kept it on top. And almost every year, we were in the race for the national championship late into November. And I had said, dumbest thing I've ever done. We got that on top, and we maintained that. And, Jack, there's a rule of life. You're either growing or you're dying. The tree's either growing or it's dying. So's grass. So's a person. So's a marriage. So's a business. And it doesn't have a thing to do with age. It has everything to do whether you're trying to maintain or whether you're trying to grow. When I left the University of Notre Dame, I never thought I'd coach again, Jack. because where to go from Notre Dame, according to my mother, except go directly to heaven, you sit by the Pope. You don't coach anymore. And there we are at the University of Notre Dame, and we're trying to maintain it. You reach a level in your life where you get comfortable. You're having success. You say, this is pretty good. Let's not jeopardize. Let's not take any chances. Let's keep it here. And any time you try to keep something there, you're dying. You never have a reason to celebrate. You never come up with any new ideas. You're not trying to achieve anything. You're just trying to maintain. When I left the University of Notre Dame, Jack, I never thought I'd coach again. And then I went to work and did television. I certainly enjoy working for ESPN now, but I had that same empty feeling, Jack. And when it became obvious to me, I wasn't tired of coaching. I was tired of maintaining. And I didn't even realize that what we should have done was set dreams and goals and standards higher. Nobody ever thought was possible again. And so that's why when you go back into coaching and do anything else, regardless how old I am, I'll never try to maintain our marriage or anything else. We're always going to be trying to improve upon it. And so those are just some of the things that we covered in the book, Jack. And all I did was talk about personal experiences. Everything in that book had to do with things that have happened to me and their true experiences. Most people didn't think I'd read a book, let alone write one, but I was quite shocked to find out, Jack, it became a bestseller and still selling very well to this day. It's printed in 6 different languages, I think. And they've come back to me and asked me to write an autobiography, which I said nobody'd be interested in my life, but I would write a book on my life based on lessons I've learned. So the title of the book will be Wins, Losses, and Lessons in the Life of Lou Holtz.
What role has faith played in your life?
Well, I have a strong faith, Jack. I have such a strong faith in God. And I just think that people talk about faith, and we're talking about it yesterday with a group of people. And I think you have to believe. Yeah, you're going to have bad breaks, you're going to have good breaks, et cetera. But in the long run, you have to have a faith in yourself, a belief in yourself, and just understand who you are. Don't take yourself too serious. I think the most important thing that we learn as we get older, Jack, is the importance of other people and doing little things. My wife had to go up to the Mayo Clinic to have her quarterly checkup. And her test started at 7 o'clock the next morning. I go back to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. I go to bed late, get up early. And there was a little note from my wife on the pillow, hoping that I sleep well, et cetera. And I'm thinking, here she is going up for her cancer checkup, and she's worried about me. I can't tell you how much that meant to me, Jack. And we don't take time to do little things. We think we have to do big things for people. Little things, little notes, little kind gestures, little thoughts. I think it, fate, whatever happens, happens, but I think we control an awful lot by our attitude. As I've said so many times, Jack, and I know our time's running down, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how we react to what happens to us.
In a half a minute, what advice would you give to young people today?
To believe in yourself, to understand that you have talent and ability, and ask yourself this question. If I didn't show up, who would miss me and why? If I didn't go home, would my wife and children miss me and why? If they would not miss me, that's a shame. If I didn't go to work, would my company miss me? If my company went out of business, would my customers miss me? Be sure you're making a difference in people's lives.
Coach, I want to thank you, for all our listeners, for a one-hour lesson on life. And thanks for all the enjoyment, all the quips, and the fantastic work.
Pleasure to be with you, Jack, and thank you for having me.
Our guest next Sunday will be Michigan's premier architect, Victor Sirocki. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week because anything is possible. Spohn.